Please do not hurt me. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radios, Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey, we all got it. Masters of Life and the Podcast. It is time for us to conduct ourselves properly in accordance to the ancient ways that have been entrusted to us. We preserve our strength for you through words, through songs, and our dance. We show our love for you.
Seventh Generation, a song by Haudenosaunee singer-songwriter Howard Lyons from his Sound of America recording CD entitled Spirit Walk. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices on Radio for Peace International. RFPI is Global Community Radio. In today's Wolf Mountain program, we are very honored to share a visit with one of the finest Native writers, educator, and scholar activist in Indian country, Professor Gabe Horn. In addition to serving on Yat Kiddishi Native Center's Advisory Council, Gabe is a close personal friend to Betty and I. We are brothers in spirit and brothers in honoring Mother Earth and our Indigenous movement. We first met 10 years ago, while both of us were speakers at a Native conference focusing on the true history and legacy of Christopher Columbus during the so-called Columbus Quincentenary. Over the years, our hearts grow strong together, sharing ceremony and working together on projects to defend Sacred Mother Earth, for Native rights, and for social justice. Gabe Horn and I also share a similar history of experiences growing up in the Indian movement, which makes me proud of him as a brother warrior. Listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have heard me praise his fine book, Native Heart, an American Indian Odyssey, published by New World Library. I again urge everyone who cares about the Native struggle and who wishes an insight into what many fine AIM brothers and sisters went through, read Gabe's book, Native Heart. Professor Horn is a nationally known writer. In addition to Native Heart, Gabe wrote a four-book Native People, Native Ways series entitled The Native American Book of Wisdom, Book of Life, Book of Change, and Book of Knowledge. These are excellent writings for all ages, published by Beyond Words Press. Professor Horn authored the fine book, Contemplations of a Primal Mind, published by the University of Florida Press. Listeners to our Wolf Mountain broadcasts have also heard the 8-program series audio literature presentation of the book, Wisdom Keepers, Meetings with Native American Spiritual Elders, by authors Harvey Arden and Steve Wall. That beautiful book, published by Beyond Words Press, was edited by our program guest, my brother Gabe Horn. Last but certainly not least, Gabe's latest work, The Book of Ceremonies, A Native Way of Honoring and Living the Sacred, is a very special and precious literature, published by New World Library. The beautiful illustrations in this Book of Ceremonies was drawn by his very talented artist's son, Carissus Horn. As a special treat for our listeners to honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, my brother Gabe Horn gifted us a newly released CD that features excerpts from his Book of Ceremonies, which he also gave me permission to include in our interview and air on Radio for Peace International. This beautiful CD includes selections read by the author, Gabe Horn, accompanied by music from our friend Dennis Harrison. Listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have also heard the beautiful song, Free Peltier, written by Dennis, from the Songs for Justice Project CD, which Betty and I are proud to be a part of, along with Gabe Horn, Ted Williams, and Diana Osborne. We will share that special Free Peltier song later on during the interview with my brother, Gabe Horn. As an honor to Gabe, his beautiful wife Amy, and their family, we begin with an audio excerpt entitled, The Path of Beauty, She Greets the Dawn. Thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kanama Takwasin, to all of our relations.
When we walk on the path of beauty, beauty comes from within us. For to walk this path is to understand and acknowledge the essence of beauty in all other forms of life as well. We know it is not the nature of light to vanquish all darkness, or the nature of good to conquer all evil, nor the nature of any species or being to have dominion over any other. It is the nature of all things in the mystery to find their place in the balance. This is the path of beauty's way. Some have said that we have experienced all this before, that this is not the first time we have journeyed this earth walk. Perhaps this is true. Perhaps we have done all this before, and we have a sense of it all happening again. Still everything, past and present, tangible and illusory, happens now. For time is of the mystery, and is all really one. To walk the path of beauty's way, we must remember to make ourselves aware of this present moment, to be attentive, to be grateful, for as we make this journey that is life, as we experience and appreciate the here and now, we walk the path of beauty. Just before daybreak, she watches the pale slip of the waning moon rise above the dogwood and palms across the street. Hanui is too slender to give much light, she thinks. Shadows slip across the moon's face. Are they clouds or phantasms? She contemplates both, remaining still, watching while the sky lightens. Above her, two doves perch on a telephone wire. She hears them murmuring and reflects on her marriage and on the man she sleeps with and on destiny unfolding. Though the sun has yet to show himself in person and form, his light tinges the undersides of the clouds a glowing ashen peach. She feels herself call out to him, "Wake up, Grandfather." For tonight Han Wee will hide her face and ready herself for another cycle, another circle of fullness. Like the moon, when she caught the sun making love to the wind. When she too felt betrayed by her lover and wanted to hide her face in shame. But on this day, the moon and she are beautiful together. She knows this. She feels it. She has a sense of it. And she's glad that she came out to greet the daybreak star and instead was surprised by the moon. The cardinals take up the call now. Wake up! Wake up! A mantle of clouds drifts along, concealing the slight crescent of Han Wee, and the horizon shows a sliver of fire. Morning has arrived. Even the crows are awake. Their hard caws come from all directions in the neighborhood, and a mockingbird sings her entire repertoire. The air tastes sweet, she thinks. And then she voices her first sounds since she opened her eyes from sleep. It is a good day, she whispers. It is a good day to be alive.
And today we have a very special guest. I'm very honored to introduce my friend, Mr. Gabe Horn. As is the custom of Wolf Mountain Radio, I always ask our guests to introduce themselves in the way they wish to. So I'm just going to say akwe, that's a greetings in my language, and say hello. Thank you, sir, for being on Wolf Mountain Radio today.
Appreciate being here, Ones. Thank you. My legal name is Gabriel Horn. I have been known for over half my life as White Deer of Autumn. Recently, as I reached my 53rd year, that name has changed, and I am now known as Breath of the Dolphin, and that is who I am, and is probably how I'll leave this world.
Mr. Horn is well known to Wolf Mountain listeners because I've explained that my friend Gabe, as I like to use his English name, is a very well-known writer, and one of my favorite books is a book entitled Native Heart. Gabe, would you please talk about Native Heart in particular and some of the examples from the book that you describe up till now, your life as someone who cares for Mother Earth and who taught in some of the early American Indian Movement freedom schools.
I started Native Heart in a creative writing class that I was taking with other creative writing instructors when the instructor had asked us to write about an incident in our lives that had changed us. And at that time I was about 38, 39 years old. And, you know, when you have to go into a pool like that, what do you choose? And I didn't know, so like everybody, I had quite a pool to choose from experiences. And I chose this experience where I was in the heart of the earth, and we were in an apartment in Little Earth Housing Projects before it was a Little Earth Housing Projects. That's where the AIM school was located. And we had been broken into the night before. And so some of my students, ranging from about boys from about 12 to 17 years old, had stayed in the apartment, to protect it that night. And, of course, these were during the days when AIM and the United States government were at war. And so anything affiliated with AIM was connected in that way with the government, to the government. And so my students, I woke up one night in a tizzy and realized that they were in trouble, and I ran across the projects and saw men approaching the projects, and these turned out, as I got into the building and shook the students up, they woke up with sticks and clubs and their makeshift weapons that they had, and were standing before men with guns. And I wrote about, that was the first thing I wrote about. And when I was selected by my group to read to the class, I realized that when everybody looked at me and said, these are all teachers now, that they didn't know things like this happened in this country. I realized I had a responsibility then to tell this story. It wasn't my story. It was the story of our people struggling to survive in these times, and the great pride and the beauty of who we were as people, and the strength and the courage that needed to be told. And so I saw that as a catalyst to continue writing about those experiences, and so the book is not about my life more or less as it is about the lives of all the people I had in my life who were of the movement, who were Indians of the heart and soul.
Many of our listeners are listeners throughout the world, in Asia, Africa, what's now called South America, and Europe. They might not be too familiar with the American Indian movement or some of the situations that were affecting native land and indigenous peoples in what's now called North America, especially during the years in the 1970s and parts of the 80s where the American Indian movement was a little bit more well known. And one of the reasons why I love the book is that some of the experiences and feelings that you went through, I share. Would you just describe a little bit about your time in the 70s and 80s and what it was like to be, relatively speaking, a young man trying to fight for the defense of Mother Earth and the well-being of our life and the rights of our people who are called American Indians. Would you share a little bit about that?
Well, I felt that like a circle in the movement, everybody had a purpose, and I saw my purpose as a teacher. I thought that if I could pass on and perpetuate the incredible things that I learned from the elders in my life to the children that I was coming in contact with, that this was my purpose in life. And to help these children in strengthening their identities as mine was shattered and as theirs has been shattered often, that I could help strengthen their identities. And so I saw my life then as a teacher. As a teacher, things happen to me in the AIM schools that with the other teachers in the AIM schools that didn't happen to every other teacher in the United States, like, you know, having your windows shut out or being surrounded with men with guns. So having to protect your children from racist police, that threat of being killed at different times, and yet not being afraid and just being sure that what we were doing was right, because what we were doing was teaching these children, yes, the earth is your mother, and yes, you are to protect her, and that Indian does not come in parts and percents of blood, that you either are an Indian or you're not. It's not in the color of your skin or in the color of your eyes or your hair. It's how you live and how you think and walk and talk and how you are as a human being. And so, because in these survival schools, we had kids not only who were children of the leaders of the movement, but also children of parents who lived in the projects, and they were of various backgrounds and races and tribes. We helped to establish that they were whole people and that they were Indians, and that meant a lot to me when that gift was given to me. So I just wanted to share it with others.
As you were speaking a moment ago, and you talked about who is an Indian and what makes us, quote, Indians, native people, it comes to mind, in many listeners who have heard me over the years on Wolf Mountain Radio express the fact, for example, that I personally will not pledge allegiance to the American flag or sing the national anthem. And although I love all people and I try to have respect for all nations or people, the fact is, from my point of view, the United States government, which is really not separate from the military-industrial complex of the United States, from the very beginning of the Euro-American time here in North America into what's now called the United States, in many ways really is and has been an enemy of the indigenous peoples here. And as a so-called Native American, I disrespect that concept of the American flag, and what it represents to me is really, you might even use the word enemy. For me, it's always been a hard thing when I go to powwows and other events, when I
see some of our own Native American people making such a big thing over the American flag. And I was wondering if you might want to share your comments on this.
I remember that in that little apartment that we called the Ames Survival School, Heart of the Earth, that it had these picture window doors, and across, draped across the door, we had an upside down American flag, and that was the only way we hung the American flag in those days. As I became a teacher later on in life in the 80s and became part of the public school system and the colleges and things like that, I, as a respect to my colleagues, used to stand for the flag out of respect for them. Never put my hand over my heart, never pledge allegiance because my allegiance is to the people and to the earth. The more I thought about Leonard Peltier and his imprisonment, that I made a vow to myself that as long as Leonard Peltier was in prison, I would never stand for that flag. I would never show respect for that flag as long as Leonard Peltier was in prison. And in case of assemblies, when large gatherings of faculty are together and the flag is presented and I sit down, people will say, why are you sitting down during the flag? And of course that can be intimidating, and it takes an amount of courage to do such a thing, but it gives me a chance to educate them and say, how can you expect me to respect that flag when Leonard Peltier has been in prison for 25 years? Now, as far as Native Americans honoring the flag, I never did understand that personally. I understand how we can be indoctrinated, because I was part of that indoctrination system. But I don't hold my children responsible for my indoctrination. There are Native people in this land, and there are, who fought in the wars. They made that choice, either through indoctrination or not. They made that choice. Did they fight for the United States of America, or did they fight for the land? Did they fight for concepts that they thought were protecting their people and the earth? Now, if they fought for the United States of America, that's a whole different thing, and I don't have much regard for people who fight for the United States of America or any industrial military complex like that. But I do respect people who defend the earth and defend the rights of life. So I don't understand that if a few generations of Native Americans believe that they fought and died for that flag, when we think of all the generations of Native people that died under that flag, the flag that Black Kettle waved in the face of the soldiers as they massacred his people at Sand Creek and the other places where they were promised to be allowed to live in peace, all the treaties and the violations. I mean, what are we doing? We either, we honor the flag that represents our nation, if we're Dene or Onondaga or Anishinaabe or Lakota, but to honor the flag of the United States of America at a gathering of Native Americans, I just don't understand that. And I know that not standing for it, even in times of powwow, is as risky in some ways as it is not standing in the white world for it. Indians get just as mad at you sometimes. So life can be very precarious.
Yeah.
Song. You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices on Global Community Radio, Radio for Peace International. This is your host and producer of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, Ones Pritzker, talking with my special guest, my brother, Gabe Horn. Before we continue talking about more of some of your beautiful writing, we're on this subject of differences, if you don't mind me asking, sir. And as friends, we've talked about this before, and even today at lunch we were speaking, that maybe I'll say it this way again, I try to have respect for all people's right to believe in whatever way one chooses to believe. However, I don't appreciate someone of a certain belief, or what in English some people call religion, trying to force someone else to follow or believe that way. And the history of what in English might be called Christianity, at least from my point of view, exemplifies a certain insanity of how people of a certain belief, i.e. Christianity, have for over the last 500 plus years really hurt people of color, indigenous peoples in particular, all over the world. The history of missionaries and how the whole U.S. government and Canadian government involvement with the church and boarding schools and the real whitewashing of our people have really hurt many generations, to the point where for me, I also have trouble accepting how one can be a traditional Native person and still, in a sense, honor Christianity. Would you please share any of your thoughts on this, if you have any, sir?
Well, what comes to my mind is a story that my uncle related to me, and it has to do with a plaque that's somewhere around this area here in the Tampa Bay area, where the local Native people had clubbed to death a couple of missionaries on the beach. And of course, in the plaque it says, you know, how these missionaries were martyrs and how they were brutally and savagely beaten by these, of course, savage Indians. Well, my uncle had a whole different perspective. That was my uncle Nip on that, and it was an interesting perspective. He said to me that if somebody comes into the United States and teaches the overthrow of the government, and teaches the violent overthrow of the government, or teaches a usurpation of the government, or who teaches treason, and usually they're put to death. They're executed. And he said, what were these missionaries doing? But they were teaching the usurpation of the Indian way of life. And he said, they were put to death. And looking at that perspective, one can understand what other people in the world, besides Islam and Christianity, do they believe that their way is the only way? I'm not in Africa, and I'm not in England telling them to live the Indian way or the Native way. Why should they be here telling Native people how to live this way? And the other thing I can't put out of my mind is I was also taught that you judge the greatness of a religion based on the behavior of the practitioners. And if we look at the practitioners' behavior of Christianity over the centuries, my gosh, it's horrifying. Not saying there are not good Christians in the world. There are good Christians in the world. But as a religion, if we were to judge that religion based on the overall behavior of the practitioners, whoa. So I don't understand why a Native American would adopt Christian beliefs based in a Judeo religion. The religion is Judaism that Christianity comes from. That why we would want to pray to a Jewish concept or a Christian concept of God. We believe in the great mystery, the totality of all things, the interrelatedness of all things, something inexplicable and unexplainable. We believe that the earth is our mother. How can we be taught to subdue our mother and to dominate other life forms which are our relatives? It doesn't make any sense. So look at the behavior of Christianity. What has it given to the world? What has it done for the betterment of humankind or this world? What has happened to our forests? What's happened to all the species of animals and insects and plants? I don't understand how a Native person can say that I am Ojibwa, but I'm a Catholic. I don't understand that. You are Ojibwa because that is your religion, that is your way of life. You're Lakota because that is who you are, that's your way of life. You're a Native American because you look at the world a certain way, that the earth is your mother, that all things are interrelated. So how can you be, and why would you choose to be something other than what has worked here for tens of thousands of years? So when we look at the history of Christianity on this land, just like the history of the United States under its flag, it makes you wonder. It's time to get our heads out of the sand, eh? And start looking at who are we and what are we and claiming what we are or reclaiming what we are. And we were not Christians before the arrival of Christianity, and we were not United Statesians. So it's time to get a grip here, I think, and I try to do it just through my writing and to share what I feel is important in that way. Man, I told you just a little while ago, I think the scariest moment of my life was when I let go of Catholic indoctrination and embraced the concept of the great mystery, when I realized at that moment that I was a part of a totality, an inexplicable wholeness. That was the moment of my life. That was the epiphany, was the moment when I realized that this is a whole different way of looking at things, that I'm responsible for my actions, and that, you know, I can't simply ask for forgiveness when I do something wrong, because I'm responsible for everything I do. And I don't hold, if there's a sacrifice to be made, then I make the sacrifice. I don't look at someone 2,000 years ago for that sacrifice. So at that moment, in my uncle's backyard, I realized what it meant to be a Native American, and that meant to embrace the concept that we are all part of an incomprehensible totality that each tribe and nation had a name for. Wakantanka, Agichi Manidu, Manidu, Wanavalona. Every nation had an address they used, and it was not Jehovah, and it was not Yahweh, and it was not a fiery volcanic god from the Middle East. It was a concept that all things are part of this totality. So why would you not want to embrace that? Probably because you don't want to assume responsibility for who you are and what you are. I don't know. I know that it's a scary thing, and it's time that we begin to look at what way, you know, contributed over half the world's food staples, representative government, what religion, what way of life produced so much beauty, and what one, what did the other produce? Just look at history, I guess, and one can make their choices. But I don't know. I think it's time that the line's drawn. I mean, there is no time. It's time now. You either stand up and be counted as a Native person, Indian, Diné, American Indian, whatever you prefer. But that represents a way of life. And it's time to see that the line is being drawn. It is drawn. There is no question about it now. Now is the time. Thank you.
Listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices on Radio for Peace International. RFPI is Global Community Radio. Yatkidichi Native Center, producers of Wolf Mountain Radio, welcomes your comments about our programs. Listeners may write to us at Wolf Mountain Radio, care of Yat Kidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. That is capital YAT, capital KITISCHEE Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, NAPALES, Florida, 34120, USA. Listeners may also email us at wigwam@aol.com. That is capital WIGWAUM@AOL.com. Please let Radio for Peace International know that you enjoy hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. You can send written comments to RFPI at RFPI, P.O. Box 88, Santa Ana, Costa Rica, Central America. RFPI's email address is rfpicr@sol.racsa.co.cr. Radio for Peace International is truly global community radio. Many listeners to our Wolf Mountain programs also know that we have the honor to be a member of RFPI's International Board of Advisors, and that we have the honor to volunteer several months each year at RFPI's studio in Costa Rica. We mention this because Wolf Mountain Radio wants all our listeners to know how special and unique RFPI truly is. As global community radio, they depend upon listeners' financial support to remain on the air. In truth, it is a financial struggle every month to keep this station going. This is why we are asking everyone to become a member of Friends of Radio for Peace International.
An important message from your friends here at Yat Kidichi Native Center. The music you heard following the comments of my brother Gabe Horn were the song Warrior from Kiowa Apache flutist Andrew Vasquez from his Wind River CD, available from Mac O'Shea Music. Then we played a traditional song from the Black Lodge Singers off Canyon Records' Voices Across the Canyon CD Volume 5. Well, dear friends, unfortunately, we are nearing the end of our time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio. Next week, we continue our conversation with nationally noted author and educator, my warrior brother Gabe Horn. We conclude today's broadcast with Buffy St. Marie's classic, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Indian legislation's on the desk of a do-right congressman. Now he don't know much about the issue, so he picks up the phone and he asks advice of a senator out in Indian country, a darling of the energy companies who are ripping off what's left of the reservations. I learned a safety rule. I don't know who to thank. Don't stand between the reservation and the corporate bank. They'll send in federal tanks. It isn't nice, but it's reality. Bury my heart in wounded knee. Deep in the earth. Companies who want the land, and they've got churches by the cousins, want to guide our hand and sign our mother
dark. The FBI got off their hands and told us she died of exposure. Bury my heart and hope in me. Don't ask why. On Saturday night, oh, bury my heart and hope in me.